Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the Amwha Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Wildberg, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The Amwha Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another great episode of NucleCast. Of course, I'm your host, Adam Lowther, and today we have Brigadier General retired Rob Spalding, Speedo, as he's affectionately known by most of us. And now that he's out of the Air Force, he is the CEO of a company called Semper, which has an interesting 5G technology. And as you know, occasionally on NucleCast, if we come across a company that's developing a technology that has potential applications to the nuclear enterprise, we bring those companies on and we talk to them about it so that we can get a better sense of, you know, not just what is the government doing, but who else out there in this, you know, in small businesses in corporate America besides the big defense contractors are doing things that might be relevant, might be able to help the nuclear enterprise. Because, of course, we want to stay ahead of the Russians and the Chinese. With that, Speedo, thanks for joining
us on
NucleCast.
Thanks. Great to be back.
All right. So let's the last time you were on, probably a year or so ago, you've written a couple of books on China and you were at the embassy in China a while back. And, for those that don't know you, B-2 pilot, spoke the language and went to went from the National Security Council to China and then came back, retired. And then, of course, now the CEO of this company that has this really unique 5G technology, because we think about what happens in a nuclear detonation, if we have the EMP attack, what would that mean for our ability to communicate? And so you're addressing that. So tell us about the technology your company's developed and what it means and then why it's relevant to the enterprise.
Okay, well, let me start with why it's relevant. I think one of the things, so I was a captain. I take that back. I was a lieutenant major, just becoming a lieutenant colonel when Hurricane Katrina happened. I don't know if you remember Hurricane Katrina, but I was at Whiteman and flying B-2s. And I looked at, if you remember, they actually flew C-17s to Iraq to pick up the Louisiana National Guard, take them out of combat, put them in C-17s, flew them back to New Orleans. And when they got on the ground, they interviewed the guys and they said, I don't see a difference between where I just left. That's how devolved New Orleans became in just a few days because of the loss of infrastructure. So one of the things that I became acutely aware of, here I am, I'm flying a nuclear powered bomber. Our comms are just fantastic, never going to go away because they're built that way. They're old, but they were highly survivable. But, and then I started to think, well, okay, we have this capability to provide the capability to fight through nuclear war. But if something like that happens, like where an EMP takes away the infrastructure, what happens to the rest of our society? And, just from a deterrent perspective, this is where EMP weapons, I think, have create a real problem for the United States, because it doesn't take a lot of them. And because once you lose that connectivity, then you have to worry about, is civil society going to devolve? And then if so, are the military forces actually going to be positioned and ready to fight outside our borders? Are we going to be so focused on just maintaining civil order in our own society? So from a deterrent perspective, I always felt that we just weren't thinking properly in that. I think during the Cold War, we thought about this. In other words, how do we maintain society going? And of course, we weren't all connected on cell phones at the time. And so now we're all connected on cell phones. Everybody, uses them for everything they do. And now all of a sudden the network goes away. What does that do to our society? And I think that's so when you're thinking about deterrence, there is both a deterrent in terms of we can have an offensive capability, But there's also a level of deterrence saying, hey, we're protected, we're hardened here at home. So if somebody tries to, use nuclear blackmail like a North Korea or Iran, not just Russia or China, we can say, okay, guess what? Our society is going to take that hit. We're going to be okay because we built resilient infrastructure. In the past, it was giant voice and AM radio, which back then everybody had an AM radio. Now nobody has an AM radio. They all have a cell phone, and we just did an announcement, across the nation on those cell phones, but the networks weren't built to survive. So that's what I think the relevance is really providing resiliency for the homeland. And that's where I come at this from. So, and I'll pause there because, that probably may spur some questions.
So, if the idea is to keep the cell network up and running, do you see a broader problem? Because, the cell network's important because that's how we communicate. I mean, you're spot on there, but is there a much broader problem with having proper shielding? Because we always talk about how would an EMP propagate along the wires for, the electrical system and, elsewhere. And so if the power goes down, would your capability still be relevant, or would it be dependent, or what would be the implications there?
So let's start with the device end of that question. The devices survive EMP real well. And in fact, we've taken, just about every device that we got out of Best Buy, we tested, and they survive an EMP as long as they're not plugged into the wall. If they're plugged into the wall, then you could potentially get a voltage spike in there and cause it to burn out. But if it's not plugged into the wall, it's going to survive that real fine, and it's going to continue to operate right through an EMP. Now let's go look at the infrastructure, which is not designed, in its current state to survive. The MAC, the networks that the major carrier networks, those macro towers that they use to propagate that signal, they take years, sometimes up to 2 years, and millions of dollars to build. It's a really complex and complicated requirement, and because it takes so long, and it's so complex to build, they want to pump as much power out of that as possible. So when you just take a look at the existing macro network that we have today, it would be completely infeasible from an affordability perspective for us to harden those. It's just too much. And we actually, as we started to work with the carriers, and we began to say, okay, this is not something that we can do. And what is something that is more practicable that we could do that actually would take advantage? And so the one thing that you realize in how we build the networks today, first of all, not only are we they pumping out so much power, but they're highly centralized. And that centralization of the network core, which is really the brains of a network, that's in a data center somewhere that is absolutely going to be affected if there's a power outage, or certainly the EMP will affect the equipment that's inside. And so, number one, you lose a brain to your network, which, as we saw in the Nashville bombing, that takes the whole network down because all the towers are basically stupid. Unless they're connected to the brain, they don't work. And so the way we believed that this could work is by taking that brain and hardening the shell that brain exists within, and then extending that brain to the local area. Now, you can't harden the macro tower, but it turns out you can harden 5G radios on the infrastructure side. They just can't be, pulling so much power and have such long cables. So you have to have lower power. So now what are we talking about? We're talking about a very decentralized, smaller system that has to be affordable enough that you can scale it so that, you can actually deploy it in plenty of areas where you need it. And so the problems that come from a technology standpoint that come into play are several. One is cooling. Servers today, so you need a data centers, but servers today aren't designed to run at the same temperatures, extreme temperatures, that cellular equipment's designed. So you have to actually create the engineering to allow for that kind of power and that kind of computing to be run at the edge in an area that's probably going to be out in the open, to the elements in terms of outside. They're not in an air-conditioned data center. They're outside to the elements. That's how typical cellular equipment is deployed. The other is, okay, I'm going to send my data center out there. Now we have controls in the data center for people that can come in and what they can do, and everybody's got to be vetted. Well, you had to create a data center that didn't need people in it because it had to be scaled. It had to be decentralized. And so we had to automate all the functions of the data center and then make it so that if anybody tried to penetrate the, the wall, then we would know, and the data center itself could begin to protect itself from having a data spillage. So that's another one. And then finally, once you've done all that, then you can start to look at, can we harden it from EMP? And you can harden it from EMP, but it's going to look a little bit different than your standard macro tower. And in the end, what you have is a very decentralized architecture. And the beautiful thing about it is, because it's created in this way, it's kind of like a device, you can begin to plug that in at certain locations within your existing network and extend that resiliency to that existing network all the way up to, but not including EMP. So where the EMP hardening is required because you can't harden the macro tower, that's the radio that's within the node. So what you do is you basically have a smaller deployment that plugs into a macro tower, and in plugging into a macro tower, now you end up amplifying to hundreds of square miles. So over time, you can create a nationwide coverage that may shrink if you have an actual EMP, but you can protect all the vital areas, if that makes sense.
So I'm trying to envision exactly what you're talking about. Help me create a picture, both for my own mind and for the listeners, of, so I sort of conceptually understand what the Semper technology does, but help me create a better mental image of what does it look like. And, it specifically plugs into towers, give me some better, a better mental
right.
image.
Well, we have different form factors. So one, is about 6 feet tall, and it looks like, it looks like a bullet that's standing on its base. It, kind of has a rounded top for, a satellite antenna, so that you can use satellite backhaul as a backup. So it kind of looks like a rounded bullet. And if you were to open it up, it would look like a standard data center inside. You would have all the pieces of a data center. And but that inside, that would be protected from people touching it. It would be protected from the elements, and it would be protected from EMP. So that's kind of how it looks like, in a kind of the big version. A smaller version that we have, it weighs about 300 pounds, and it looks like a box. For the best way to kind of envision it, it looks like a box on wheels. And the reason we put it on wheels is because one person can take handles and move it around like a wheelbarrow. The real, I think, game-changing thing about this is not just this, that this is hardened and that it's secure. It's that you, meaning you, Adam, could set this up. I could ship it to you right now. You don't need to know a thing about cellular. You don't need to know anything about a data center. I could ship it to you. You could plug it in, and within about 5 or 6 minutes, you'd have the ability to use your phone. And then over time, you could add applications or whatever to it, but it would be a device that you could basically connect your phone directly to. And that's what we do. You just basically deploy this thing, this device, and all of a sudden, it's like AT&T and Amazon showed up in a box, and you plug it in, and now your phone just works. Does that help? And huh. then the way we
yeah.
plug it into the tower is pretty easy. We can shoot a laser over, like a laser link over to the tower, and have that laser link terminate in a fiber that goes into the tower itself, into the baseband units of the radio. That's one way. It can be just connected via fiber right to the baseband unit of the tower. So basically, you're just taking a wire and plug it into this device, and then you plug it into your macro tower, and now all of a sudden, this device provides you some amount of coverage, and then you're plugging into a macro tower that covers hundreds of square miles. That is really transformational.
And so essentially, each one of these devices that are at the large, you know, everybody's familiar with the big towers, and we know what they look like. We see them on the side of the road. You plug one of these units in, and then that tower is no longer susceptible.
No, that tower is. But because you have a node there locally, right, that node is not. So think of it, you've got two umbrellas. You've got a very big umbrella, and these are the carrier towers, and this is a smaller umbrella. So basically, it takes away this big umbrella, but everywhere you have these things, you have smaller umbrellas, and you can put those over, and they go out about 3 miles. So say I'm going to put one in, you know, a building, like for instance, in for a community, you say, hey, we're going to put this at the town center, and we're going to cover the community. And then anywhere that you want to have survivability from EMP, you would put these things. And they're fairly inexpensive, so you can drop them in. What I'm saying is that for everything else, and this happened actually in a demo that we did at Whiteman Air Force Base with Northrop, somebody came in and cut the fiber to the base cellular infrastructure. So everybody's, you know, phones went down, whether the T-Mobile, AT&T, Verizon, no phones were working. And the reason is somebody had dug up the fiber to those towers. So for something like that, our node will continue to give it the brains to keep that network operating. So that's the case where for everything but EMP, it's going to take that. It's going to take all those macro towers out. There's no way to protect them. But for everything else, whether it be a natural disaster or some kind of attack where you, or say it's a cyber attack, right? A cyber attack of that network. If that goes down, we can plug into that macro tower and power that macro tower locally. So it allows you to take, you know, some smaller capability, plug it into a bigger capability, amplify that for everything except for EMP. Once EMP hits, the smaller device will work. The bigger macro tower obviously will be gone.
Okay, so it's that time in the show where we have to take a quick break. But when we come back, tell me about how you think this, and I'm starting to see the relevance now, but tell me how you think this would be relevant, like let's say, for example, at nuclear bases. So you're listening to NucleCast, and we'll be right back.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the Amlaw Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back, and we're talking to Rob Spalding. He's the CEO of Semper, and we're talking about a technology that is going to allow us to continue to communicate if EMP or something else takes out our cell networks. So, Rob, how is this relevant specifically to, you know, nuke bases?
Well, as you know, Adam, interoperability is the big problem in DoD, and that's the same thing with nuclear forces. And so how do you have the ability to communicate in the same ways that we do every single day, but still have that survivability and security? And that's really where Semper nodes shine. So that ability to basically take what are the mission areas that you need to have capability, and those are where you deploy your devices, and everywhere you do, you have the resiliency and the security you need in a private sense that allows you to continue the mission. So let's take the example of the press release for the Northrop and Whiteman Air Force Base demo. What we were demonstrating there was an advanced flight line of the future application. So, you know, you're maintaining an aircraft in Guam, and you need back shop support, you know, back in Barksdale. You need to talk to some specialist back there. Okay, you need a secure connection, and you need a survivable connection. And so you would basically put one of these things near the flight line where you would be needing it. It would allow you to communicate, and would allow you to call back. And I think more importantly, and this really gets to the interoperability, is because there's a little data center there, you can begin to integrate all of those existing communication systems that you currently have on the base, like a land mobile radio. So, you know, everybody's using these walkie-talkies to do maintenance, and, you know, they don't have a way to take that walkie-talkie in Guam and talk to a guy on a walkie-talkie in Barksdale. But when they have these devices located there, they can come in to those devices, form a gateway, and then talk to each other securely and survivably through a modern 5G network. So what you're trying to do is you're creating a hub by which you can funnel traffic in from all of these legacy systems and allow you to interoperate with modern smartphones, modern tablets, modern laptops, all of this modern capability. And a lot of them, like the smartphones, are survivable for EMP. And so it really is allows you to get up into where the nuclear forces are evolving at the speed of software. You're no longer having to be at the whim of some technology that was designed in the 50s or 60s, or even designed now that is going to be outdated in 10 years, because now you're on the same level as everybody else. You can embrace commercial off-the-shelf hardware and software into that environment. Obviously, it has to be, you know, TAA compliant. You don't want Chinese gear or whatever coming into that. But once you have these devices set up, you can start to integrate all these capabilities. And so all these things that I really wanted to have as a B2 crew member that I had at home, that I couldn't take to work, now that allows you to kind of work with those applications and that different kind of hardware like smartphones that really makes your job a lot more efficient and convenient. And furthermore, you can create secure connections so that, you know, the commanders or anybody else don't have to go to some special room to make a call. They can actually use the network that they have and make secure calls, and they can make it over a network that's survivable.
Yeah, that's because that's one of the big things that, you know, is I think a lot about NC3 Next and wonder, how do we make this new NC3 system secure and survivable? Let me ask you a question about, you know, one of the big things is that when we discuss NC3 is how is, as we move from sort of analog systems to digital systems, how do we ensure that, you know, the Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans don't get in those systems? Can you talk at all about sort of the security of the system and how do we, well, we want to make sure we have access to it and that, you know, it's even after an EMP, but how do we know? Because I expect that the Russians and the Chinese are going to, you know, we'll see cyber attacks on our logistics networks, on our comms networks, because they'll want us to be blind and deaf before they attack. So therefore, how are your, is the, you know, the simper, you know, the bullet that you described or this mobile unit, are they secure from hacking, or how secure are they? Or
so we designed them according to the zero trust strategy within DDoS. So the zero trust framework, we designed it according to that. Remember I talked about tamper. We actually had to develop a few technologies because while, you know, our team had built like a single device, like a small server that had, you know, could be tamper proof. And if you tried to open it up, it would zeroize things. But this is an entire data center, albeit small. And so we had to develop some technology to be able to do that. And then the data center itself has to autonomously protect itself. And so our nodes can go for years and, you know, somebody tries to do something to them, they're not going to be able to get any of the data. Even if they're powered off, somebody was to try to get into them, you know, you would basically lose your keys. And so you get a brick. And so I think that's the piece that that really makes it, because you're right. We thought about this. You can't put a data center out in the open without enabling it to protect itself. We actually even went so far as to look at like, okay, we're out in the middle of Africa. What if somebody's just trying to steal things? Well, can we create active systems? So we do actually have designs for active systems, but most of the things that you're concerned about it are, can you just protect the data if somebody tries to get into it? And so all of our nodes basically detect if somebody is trying to get in, and basically they take certain actions based on what the customer requirements. Do we need to zeroize it? Do we need to wipe drives? Do we need to destroy things? All these things are available to the customer. And I think the cool thing about this is we developed it not just for the military, but for everybody. And so within a couple of weeks, you're going to be able to order this thing off the internet. And yes, you can set it up. And it's at a price point that, because we, you know, I was thinking about this. Okay, I want to protect DoD, and this is certainly something that they can begin to onboard. They're gonna add features to it that are beyond what the standard customer, the commercial person would. But any business owner or any community leader or even some residents that just want, hey, I want to do this for my community. It's within reach now of not just Global Strike Command and or Stratcom. It's within reach of the common person, and that's what was so important to us to make this readily available.
So I'm just curious. I know how much a generator costs.
Oh, that's and, a good wait. So that question right there, I forgot to answer. So we deploy each of these with an EMP hardened generator. So if the power does go out, it doesn't really good if you have a box and it doesn't work. So So turns out, Adam, that there are actually some generators off the shelf that will survive an EMP. But you have to find out which ones are and have been tested. Yeah. And, unfortunately, that's not easy information to get a hold of.
So how much is one? I'm personally curious how much.
So I can't reveal the prices yet, but let's say that I'm fairly confident that for just a not well under 10, and in some cases, probably under $5,000 a month, you can have one of these things and basically light up your community.
Okay. I mean, maybe that's a future business opportunity. Is, it's like a survivalist.
Yeah. Well,
kind
I mean,
of thing,
preppers are going to love this because, a lot of people may not have the means as a single person, but remember, this is not infrastructure for a person. This is infrastructure for a community. So a few people can come together, and I really think it's probably going to be more for first responders, right? Because first responders have the need to provide services. But whoever builds it, it doesn't matter if it's a first responder, if it's a nuclear base, or if it's in the power company. Everybody can have access to it because it gives a survivable capability to all.
Okay, so we're in that time of the show where Bob the Genie comes out, and as I rub his magic lamp, of course, he grants three wishes to all guests, but you can't wish for, money or success or good looks or anything like that. So you got to wish for things related to our discussion. And so, Rob, let me ask you, what is your first wish?
Well, I think the first wish is, why I started this company, and that is to protect, our citizens from these types of, failures. Whether it be just somebody cutting the fiber or an EMP, I don't really care. Every time we watch a movie that has some kind of Armageddon feel to it, my wife ends up in tears, and I'm on Amazon ordering a road atlas so that I can figure out how to drive to, join up with our kids. So my goal is so that we don't have to live in that world. So my wish would be that we don't have to live in that type of world, that our communications are resilient and secure enough for whatever, our enemies or the environment throws at us, whether that be a solar flare or an EMP or, just somebody like the guy with a, RV that blew up the switching center in Nashville. We shouldn't have to suffer. And we shouldn't, mothers shouldn't have to worry about how they're going to call their kids. I mean, I think also, very, very a lot about the kids in Maui with the fire. So there's so many things that we have happened to us that where people's lives are at risk. Communications is the key thing to really provide the services, whether they be medical, whether they be first responders, and whether it be financial. And then securing the grid also requires networks that operate the software that allows them to balance the loads and keep the grid working if we have, say, some kind of event. So, and then protecting from cyber. So really, what our mission here at Semper is really no different than my mission when I swore an oath in uniform, and that is to protect, support and defend the Constitution and protect the people of America, and by extension, all of our allies and partners. So that's my wish is to protect.
Okay, so if that's wish number one, that's kind of your big overarching wish. Now let's get a little more specific with wish number two.
Wish number two is, I would like Adam to have one of my nodes so that you could see how good it was, and then you would basically promote it on NuclearCast as, I got the only survivable podcast in the world.
Wouldn't that be something?
I mean, that would be great marketing. The only survivable podcast in the world.
Yeah, well, I'll have to ask Kim, the producer, if she can, make that happen, and that'll be our tagline is, when Joe Rogan goes
we're
down,
still going,
we're still up and running. Then I'll finally eclipse his numbers. So that'll be the great thing. Okay, that's a great idea, Kim. Get on it. Let's make this happen. Okay, so your final wish number three.
Well, I think in order to make, all of that come true, we have been working very, very closely with some of the carriers, the national carriers. And I think what would be nice is if one of the national carriers would recognize the value to their customers of having survivable capability and basically decide on their own that this is something that they're really committed to doing, to being the only survivable national network in the world that was built for commercial customers, but now can support, even the nuclear forces of the Department of Defense. So it would really be to join arms hand in hand with a commercial carrier that had the spectrum, that had the reach. We've been working a lot with T-Mobile Advanced Networking Solutions, and they've been very committed at trying to see if we can bring this capability, this private / commercial capability. And I think we may be able to do that, and that would be, I think, would allow all the other things to just be icing on the cake.
So let me ask one final question before we end the show. Do you see the capability as something that would be like on and working all the time? Or is it something that, Katrina happens, a carrier or whomever comes in with these units, sets them up, gets them running, and within a very short amount of time, restores capability, even though, let's say, the power's down for an extended period of time, but these Semper capabilities are up and running. How do you foresee it?
So absolutely not. I think resiliency means that it always keeps going no matter what. It's not that you rush stuff in, after you've had a disaster to try to, and that's how some people define resiliency, not me, because you're losing lives, while you're waiting for that communication to get back up and running. So to that end, even in a natural disaster, it's really hard on networks. And one of the things that you see, so you're trying to figure out, how do I make this stuff go so it never quits? Our next version of the node, which is going to come out later this year, is a small box about the size of an Xbox, like a video game console. And it's powered by a single 4x8 solar panel. And you can put this on a rooftop. So what you see every time there's a natural disaster, like a flood, you always see rooftops. So we can entirely deploy and operate off the grid on a rooftop with this final version. And so we can proliferate really, really broadly, and we have, and you never have to lose communications. Even when everything else is down, this will continue to go. And I think that's a requirement in this day and age where we're at. People, this is how people get services. And you see people, through these things where they're painting signs on the roof, and And there's this, you remember Katrina, where they were going and they were making the X's and, hey, this house has been inspected. There's nobody here. There's no pets here. You know, what we want is to have the capability to, you call and you get, you know, you can direct them to exactly where you're at. And this is the type of life-saving services that we want to enable with our infrastructure, not, you know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks when we can rush equipment in. You know, I want to be able to say, we can do that now. We can do it on the worst day, and we can continue to do it right through. You know, remember the Tom Hanks movie where he's got the robot and, you know, it's an EMP that took everything out. Like, we don't want that to happen. We want you to continue to be able to have the society go, even if we take a step back. If we lose the grid, you know, it's going to take, because it takes 2 to 3 years to manufacture those large transformers, it's going to take a couple of years to get the grid back up in its current format. So we can still survive if we have communications, because we can get services to people. We can make them feel okay. But what we can't do is, once you lose communications, you really lose the ability to provide civil society. And as we saw in Hurricane Katrina, it breaks down super, super fast.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. Brigadier General retired Rob Spalding, CEO of Semper. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. And thanks to you, the listeners, for joining us on this episode. And if you have a company that you think has an innovative capability that you would like us to talk to their folks and see if there would be an opportunity for a good NucleCast episode, of course, reach out to Kim and let us know. And thanks for listening to this episode, and we'll see you next time. Another interesting discussion with Speedo. You know, it's always good to have these small companies that are doing, you know, we had Kodiak on, and we've had a couple others. And it's always good to see, you know, small companies doing innovative things that can be helpful, because, you know, when it comes to the whole SBIR process of companies getting involved with DOD, you know, they can sort of get that first little bit of money, and then they get into this thing called the Valley of Death, where those longer contracts don't seem to happen. And then we have the potential to lose some really good, useful, innovative technologies that, you know, would be helpful to DOD. So it's good to have them on, good to share what they're doing. And of course, hopefully maybe it'll spark you to send us another invite, you know, send us somebody else, or maybe you're interested in what these folks have to offer.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Brunthal. Follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast. Listen, follow, and review the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.